Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to author G.D. Grace's A Touch of Grace, Literary Magic, on Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, it's time for another hour on A Touch of Grace, and I am your host, producer, and author G.D. Grace, making it do what it do on this Friday evening at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, December 10th, 2010. I'm broadcasting live from Palo Alto, California, here in the enchanting San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight's show is for everyone, especially for lovers of poetic expression. And I am so thrilled that this gifted young spirit decided to be a guest on A Touch of Grace. Now, before I introduce her, let me give you a little bit of a tidbit about her right now. Fiordaliza attended Bronx Community College and graduated in May of 2008, and she accomplished an Associate's in Paralegal Studies. She was given a Perseverance Award from the Bronx Community College College Discovery Program for her diligence and commitment towards attaining an associate's degree under extremely difficult circumstances. Fiordaliza has been a published author since November of 2009, and she loves to write. She has published 3 poetry books thus far and is currently working on writing novels and short stories. In January of 2011, Fiordaliza will begin her studies at Pace University and work towards becoming a youth counselor for teens who have been abused and neglected. So everybody, without any further hesitation, help me welcome Fiordaliza to A Touch of Grace. Hey there, how you doing?
Hi. How's everyone? Good to be here.
Okay, that was all about you. I took that straight from Amazon, my friend.
It was beautiful. I was like, wow.
That's all you. And so how's your evening going so far?
Great. And yours?
You know what? It's going real good because I'm here with you and all the listeners. So it's going great. And I'm honored to have you on the show. And before I get things started, I'm going to recite an original quote to christen the final show of 2010. I call this one, You Have Arrived. When that defining moment in life reveals itself to you, you know exactly what it is, and it changes who you are forever. Your thoughts, your motivation, the energy that you put into how you exist from that moment on morphs from a slight shimmer into a raging flame called passion. And that is when you know you have arrived, and you have certainly arrived, Fiordaliza, and now let's get it started, why don't we?
Ooh, that was beautiful.
Thank you. Okay, well, why don't you share with us where your incredible story began, Fiordaliza?
Well, let me start with, I was in Bronx Community College. I had a lot going on. I was homeless, And I registered for school while I was in the shelter. And they were like, what's your address? I'm like, I didn't really want to give my shelter address. I wasn't ashamed, but I was like, okay, how do I get mail there? Because I didn't know, you know, if we had a P.O. box or something where, you know, or maybe a case manager got our mail. So I was like, I'm going to give my mother's address. So they were like, well, you can't be in 2 different addresses. So I said, you know, I'm going to do my mother's because I get my mail there. So, anywho, I thought about it. I said, you know what, I'm not ashamed. So I started using the address for the shelter. And one day I went to my counselor in the college. And she said, I noticed that you don't have, like, an apartment number. You know, she was like, if you live in a house. And I started crying. And she said, what's wrong? And I said, well, I don't live in a house. She said, I said, I don't live in an apartment either. So she said, well, are you in the streets? And I started crying again. And I said, well, not necessarily in the street, but, you know, I live in a shelter. And she said, wow, you're in a shelter and you're coming all the way. We're all the way from Brooklyn to the Bronx to come to school. I said, yes, because I have to do this. I have to get my degree. So with that said,
okay.
It was very challenging, getting from Brooklyn every day, getting up in the morning, going to school. But I did it, and she just thought that my story was just, you know, something that everybody should have known about, you know, that I was struggling and still finished school and still did what I had to do. So that's how I got the Severance Award. As far as my poetry started, when I lost my job last year, I had some poems already done, and then I just put some more together to make, I was going to make one big book. And then one of my friends was like, but why don't you break it down? You know, take all the poems and categorize them. So I did that, and then I just split them all in 50 for each book. But the poetry started, you know, just me sitting at home like, wait, I need to do something. I need to do something positive, you know. So I just started typing it in my computer. And I came across, I have a group called Poetic Heart and tag.com. And I had this lady, I had told her, I said, you know what, I would like to publish my poetry. So she gave me the information. I sent them my manuscript in November of last year. And a couple of days later, they sent me back a letter. And they said, we approved you, and we would like to give you a 7-year contract. I was like, oh, okay. So I sent them the whole manuscript. That was because you give them like 2 or 3 poems at a time. I sent them the whole manuscript, and in February of 2009, my first book, My Poetic Heart, became published.
Now, let me go back there for a minute. So you sent them your manuscript, and then they sent you a 7-year contract?
Yes.
Outstanding.
7 years. Yes.
What did that feel like for you?
It's amazing. I didn't think it could happen out of, you know, a few poems that I had put together, you know.
Well, let me just tell you what. We're gonna take it back a little further. We're going to step back a little bit in time on your incredible life. Now, you were born in the Dominican Republic. How old were you when you left?
I was about going on 8. I was like 7 and a half, going on 8. Because I came in August. My birthday's in September, so I was right there almost 8.
Okay, so you were 8 years old. Do you remember what the living experience was like back in the Dominican Republic?
It was, well, for me it was good because my parents both had, well, sorry, my father had a good job. My mother was a housewife, but my father had a good job, and he took care of us very nicely. I may add, my family was one of those that were like the rich kind of family, not, you know, not to say I'm rich, but we had money, just put it like that. So I was well taken care of. I had a good life. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so have you gone back to visit your birthplace since leaving?
Yes, I actually been back 3 times. I've been back at 10, at 16, and recently at 30.
Oh, okay. Okay, so you have been home. And so is it different now from then when you first lived there?
It looks totally different. I guess when you're a kid, you see everything bigger.
Yeah, and, most definitely.
Yes. Now when I go there, I'm like, what happened to the house? What happened to the, you know, everything looks smaller.
Right. I remember when I'm, because I was born in Biloxi, Mississippi, and I remember when they took us back there, because I was much younger when we left Biloxi, so I didn't really remember anything. I just knew that it was culture shock when I got back, because there were critters crawling everywhere, snakes, everything. The weather was just horrendous, the lightning storms and everything. So that was just something I had out of curiosity to see, and you're absolutely right. When we're young, things look much bigger to us than they do when we're older. So now, you faced quite a few challenges when you first came to this country. Now, I believe one of them was the language barrier. Didn't you have to learn to speak English?
Yes, I did. I actually came with no sense of the English language. I didn't know anything. You know, amazingly, my father knows a little. You know, he learned a few things because where he worked, it was necessary that he knew English. So he knew, like, how to, how you say it, communicate a little. So he taught me little words like bathroom or hello, please, you know, thank you. Little words like that, but I didn't know how to really just talk English. I just knew, like, a few things to defend myself, I may add. Yes.
That's courageous. Mm-hmm. You know, I know I work with a lot of Hispanic people because I know that Spanish was your first language, but I work with a lot of Spanish people, and to come into a country without knowing the language and then to get out here to try to make it for yourself, it could be a very challenging experience for people that are already here on this United States, you know, earth. But then to come from another country, wow.
Yeah, so now, I had a couple of fights because I didn't know English when I was growing up. Yes, wow. They thought I was being, like, how you say it, funny, like not trying to interact with this girl. These girls just thought I was, like, I knew English, but I was pretending not to know English. Yes, I had a couple of fights because of that.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that. So in addition to that challenge of the barrier as far as the language goes, you also encountered several other bad life events. Is there one in particular that became the defining moment for you in your life, the one that dictated which direction you wanted to go in life?
Well, I guess the shelter situation, you know, being homeless, that really changed my, like, I feel I had to change my life from there. I didn't want to be in the streets. I didn't want to be a statistic. Oh, my, that word. I didn't want to become, you know, because I had a daughter at a young age also. And you know, my life was going more to the side of alcohol and drugs and stuff. And I was like, no, I can't. I got to get out of this situation. So me going to school and it helped me. It motivated me to get out of that life, you know.
So again, you know, your challenge, the challenge with the language, and then the challenge of people misunderstanding you and not knowing it's because, you know, you just couldn't speak the language, but, you know, people can be pretty heartless. And to know that you have come from where you've come from and to where you are now is just so inspiring. And as far as drugs and alcohol are concerned, the last author that was on that did his autobiography, we spoke about it, and then I did an addiction show because, you know, addiction is very close to my heart. I just want to congratulate you and definitely encourage you. Now, moving right along, I write poetry as well, and for me, I try to write a poem in one smooth setting. It seems to me that if I break the flow, it's kind of hard for me to find that rhythm again. So what does that writing process look like for you when you sit down to write? What does that look like for you?
It comes easy to me. I don't know if it's like that for everybody, but it really does. Like, if I have, like, let's just say I feel sad today, and a poem comes to mind, I'd be like, I'll say something like, my thoughts don't matter, and then that'll come in my mind. I'll write it down, and I just go with the flow. It just didn't even. I don't know, it's just always been like that. Like, I feel, it all goes with my feelings. If I feel really happy, I might say, I love myself, or whatever it is, and I'll just start writing about that. You know, like, it just depends on my mood.
Okay, so would you say that you do it all in one sitting sometimes, and then, or sometimes you...
Mm-hmm.
Wow, most of the times. That's very impressive, because I know for me, you know, I've never experienced a serious case of writer's block like I have when I was doing writing songs and writing poetry. So, and I know that every writer encounters the dreaded writer's block. So how often do they occur for you, and how do you overcome the episodes of writer's block?
Okay, in this novel, which is, it's amazing because I went from poetry to writing a novel. The first 3 days, I was like, where do I go from here, you know? So I did a lot of research on how to write a novel first. I was like, okay, I got to do this, I got to do that, I got to break it down this way. And once I got my chapters down the line, I was like, okay, I'm going to start writing this chapter. And I stopped for like 2 days. I was like, oh, no, I can't stop, because if I stop, I'm not going to get back to it. That's one thing. Like me, I have to go to it. Like, I have to get, how do you say it? When I start something, I have to finish it that day, or I would just, I'll backtrack. You know, I'll be like, okay, I'll get it tomorrow. So, I don't call it writer's block, but I kind of get lazy. You know,
so
like,
you
I'm going to say I get lazy and then, yes, procrastination. There you go. I get that.
Yeah.
But once
okay.
I get in the flow of writing, I just go into it. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna take us on this journey, the Fiordaliza journey. I've sat down and I composed a lot of questions. So to keep things composed, so that we get everything in. And the next question that I'm gonna ask you is, how many poems have you written?
How many poems?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yes, I've written over 500 poems.
500 poems.
Yes.
Wow. So in one day, how many have you written in one day, just out of curiosity?
Yeah, I could do about 10 a day.
Unbelievable. And so when you're in that moment of writing, mm-hmm. because as a writer myself, there must be a surge of inspiration, something that pushes you, that will not allow you to stop, and you just continue.
Let's go. It's amazing. That's what it is. Every time I get this mood, I'm just like, let me start writing. And I'll keep going until my fingers get tired. Until my hands
so
hurting.
I would say, yeah, I know that experience too, because sometimes you're so burnt out and you just keep going and you're tired. And that's that little thing that, you know, they call passion. So I know that then for you, it must be great to have an outlet like Facebook that will allow you to interact with other writers as well, right?
Oh, I love it. I really love it. Networking, writing, get to see people's status and see what they're going through. And sometimes, you know, amazingly, I see people going through something and I don't even write much. I just be like, don't worry, God is taking care of it. And they're like, thank you. You know, they're not, you know, they grasp it like, wow, like, you know, she really took her time to say that. But
right.
I just like interacting. I'm a person that likes interacting. I really try to remain positive. Even if they say something negative, I'll try to remain positive either way so they can have that going, you know. Because sometimes you can put stuff on Facebook and people would be like, well, F that man or F this. Or I'd be like, why don't you try to get her in the positive role? You know, like, you know, don't worry about it. You know, it's going to be all right. Just keep, you know, do what you have to do for yourself, or, you know that God loves you, or whatever it is to make that person feel good about themselves, not make the situation worse.
Oh, yeah, I see the mudslinging that sometimes go back and forth, you know, on Facebook. But the one thing that I really love, I was pulled into the Steamy Creative Writers group on Facebook, and as a matter of fact, that's where I met you and Nike and author
mm-hmm.
Michael Charles Gibbons the latest guy that has been doing
Tracy.
A lot of writing on there. Well, yeah, there's a bunch of us on there. And so at this particular point in time, what I want to do is I want to stop right now and allow you to read My Love. I think it's My Love. From page 38 of your first book called Poetic Embrace. Are you ready to do that right now?
Actually, it's Poetic Embrace, page 38, Love Is.
Okay, there you go.
Yes, don't worry about it. I got you.
Okay.
Okay, it's Love Is. Love is patient and never anxious. Love is polite and does not fight. Love is truthful and does not lie. And it never makes you cry. Love never let you lose control. Love makes you feel whole. Love creates excitement, makes you feel like a giant. Love is more than happy times. Love is taking a risk. Love is everything great wrapped up in one, something that you can't resist. Love is precious. Love is always true. Love is like everyone in one room, but you only see the one for you.
I like that last part. Love is when you're in that room and you see that one person that's for you. So the question that I have, because, you know, I'm going to be a little inquisitive right here, did you embellish that? or was there somebody actually across the room that inspired you to write that?
Actually, no, nobody across the room. I just wanted to write what I felt what that love was, and I just like the meaning to me, and I just wrote it.
Okay. All right. Well, you know what? We're going to stop right here because what I want to do is I want to take a call, and hopefully this time somebody will talk as opposed to listen, which listening is okay, but we're going to try it. How about that? How do you feel?
No problem.
Okay.
I'm ready.
Let's go ahead. Okay, here we go. Okay. Caller 323-717, you are on with author G.D. Grace and poetess Fear DeLisa Charles. Do you have a question?
Question, GD. Good evening.
Good evening.
Hey, Theodore. The question, I had a question. I wanted to know what the turning point was in your life, but you already answered that. So what I'd like to say is that it's just, it is a blessing to know you. It's a blessing to fellowship with you in Steamy Trails, and shout out to Steamy Trails. And I just love what you're doing, and I'm glad that God is blessing you the way that he is.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. I love Steamy Trail also.
And
it's like a new
talking?
Family to me.
Who is this that just gave Theodora all that love?
This is Tracy. Hi, GD.
Hey,
oh,
Tracy.
Hi,
how you doing? Well, welcome, and I so appreciate the support that you are giving the authors on the show, as well as the show. So I thank you for listening in.
Thank you.
Okay, let's try to take another caller. Ooh, the dogs were in the background. Who let the dogs out? Okay, let's try 2009. Okay, 209 244, you are on with author G.D. Grace and Fear DeLisa. Do you have a question?
Hi, this is Katrina from Steamy Trails, and no, I don't have a question. I just wanted to tell her that I'm very proud of her. She's so supportive, and I'm just glad to have her in our group, and I just wish her well in everything that she does.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for joining the show, okay?
You are welcome.
All right, take care. Okay, now
Katrina?
What I also want, that was Katrina.
Oh.
Okay, so what we're going to do now is we're going to go ahead on and continue on with the interview. And I just really want to say to the listeners that are listening, especially the support that we both received from Steamy Trails this evening, that is really appreciated. Now, your first book, My Poetic Heart, includes some poems that you wrote back when you were 12 years old.
Yes, I started at 12.
So has your writing style changed from then to your most current ones as far as what you write about? Because I'm sure the ones you've written later in life are a bit more complex.
Yes, it's definitely changed. You know, I became more a woman, you know, when I was a kid. I think I wrote one that actually says, my heart feels as cold as ice cream. So, you know, that's when I was young.
Your heart runs cold as ice cream.
I said my heart felt as cold as ice cream. So one of those that you see that on there, I was about 14 when I wrote that. You know, but you could tell the difference. You could actually, when you read through it, you could tell the difference of the age barrier there. You know, like you could tell.
Go ahead.
I actually mix and match them to fit the book title. So some of them I sound young, and some of them I sound, you know, more older.
Okay. All right, well, let me just ask you this question. As 12, 14-year-old writing about, you know, a heart as cold as ice cream, you go ahead and go, girl. Okay, so which emotion would you say triggers that passion switch, the one that clicks it on and takes you to the deepest place where you write from? Is it like love, heartbreak, the desire to be loved? Which emotion do you think really triggers?
Actually, a little bit of everything. I think more the desire of wanting to be loved. That actually made me write more than I ever, you know, yes, more of my poetry has to do with heartbreaks and me wanting to feel the same love that I was given. I mean, giving, that I was given that person. But sometimes I feel brokenhearted, I wrote a poem. Sometimes I really fell deeply in love with someone, I wrote a poem or two, you know, to show them how I felt.
You know what's funny is that, you know what's funny is that I remember when Mary J. Blige would be singing about heartbreak and, you know, and all of that, you know, people wanted her to continue singing about that. But, you know, if you're lucky in this life and you really do fall in love, then you can't very well sing about that. So I find that kind of amusing that some of the passion within you, and even me as a writer, I can relate to that, that I write really hard when I'm hurt or when I'm longing for something. I want to give you some shout outs that are coming from the chat room, and this one is from Seeing Growth. That's Emmanuel, and he said, Lisa, I am with he says, Lisa, I am with you in spirit, can't call in but want to tell you to keep doing what you do. And then there's Tracy, who says, Lisa, she's calling you Lisa. Do you write any poems while you're here in Maryland with me? I think I read that right. Did you write any poems while you were visiting her in Maryland?
Yes. I wrote a couple there, yes. I wrote everywhere. Actually, I've been around, not the world, but I moved to a lot of states, and every state I went to, I wrote poems in that state. You know, because depending on what I was going through at the time, I did actually write at least 30 poems in Maryland. One of them, when I was moving to Maryland, I wrote one about leaving New York. That one is definitely when I got, and then I wrote one when I got to Maryland. And in the title, it says New York, so you'll know that was when I was in Maryland. Yes.
Okay, let me ask you this question then. So you answered Tracy's question and you gave Emmanuel some love back. What has been the most liberating part about completing and publishing your books?
Wow. I would have to say the day I received it in my hands. I really felt good. I was like, oh my God, I actually have a book. completing it was actually easy because I'm good with computers, and once I started typing, I think I finished writing it in like probably 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the easy part. The cover was made for me by Publish America, so I didn't have to really go through looking for illustrator or illustration or picture or, you know, I gave them an idea what I wanted and it was done. So it was pretty easy for me. When I had my book in my hand, that was really the most fulfilling moment of my life, besides having my daughter.
Okay, so that was pretty liberating. That's pretty liberating for you. And, of course, always, you know, the birth of a child is definitely something that's liberating until they get to be a certain age, and then you want to put them back where they came from.
We don't want to talk about that.
most definitely not. So now, because I've been taking the route of self-publishing of late, there's something that's, you know, looming for 2011 for me as far as working with a publisher. What has been your experience working with a publisher? What has that been like?
No, actually, I feel like I'm a number. I actually feel like that. Like, I feel like my number is going to come next. No, that's not my number. You know, like, how you just feel like you're not getting there. I haven't had a good experience with the company that I'm dealing with. I really don't have nothing really good to say besides that they were the first to publish my book, and I really appreciate that, you know, and it was done free, meaning that I didn't have to put my money up front. But I am actually taking the route of self-publishing now along with you, because I feel that I feel like I'm a number. Like I said, like when I call them, I don't get in touch with anyone. I get a reply five days later, or, you know, I don't really feel like they pay attention to me. So,
well, you know what, somebody
publishes for my next book.
Somebody from the chat room went, wow.
Yeah.
So, because this whole, you know, vision that I have in my brain is that, okay, somebody wants to publish you. They like your work. So they give you this big advance and, you know, they wine you and dine you and smooze you. So that's all on television?
All the television. I got $1 advance, $1. I couldn't even cash that check. That's what I got, saying that, you know, they approve my work and they think it's good or they're going to do it. I got $1 advance. That's what I got. And I was like,
Wait a minute.
$1.
You're literally saying that you got a dollar?
I'm serious. I can show you the check. I still have it.
Well, that is something. So what was that like when you saw the dollar check? Because were you, first of all, did they say that they were going to send you something?
Did they say
that they were
going to
send you a check?
On the contract, it said that you get an advance to state that they know that they take your work seriously and that they're going to publish you. That was what the advance was for. I'm like, okay, and what's a dollar now?
Okay, so they said, okay, so let me, I'm trying to get my handle on this. They said that they were going to send you an advance. See, because I'm trying to figure out, of course, they had to mail that to you, didn't they?
Yes, they did, and it came so pretty. I love the color of the check and everything. I was looking at it like, ooh, I got a check, you know.
Because I can't imagine being somebody that is, you know, somebody is giving me or submitting me or trusting me with their work, and I say, mm-hmm. I believe in you, and then mm-hmm. I reach across the desk and hand you a check for a dollar.
Oh, I was stunned at that one. And then, amazingly, I believe that I had a 7-year contract, so I had to keep giving them books. And so I figured out that it's 7 years for every book. That's another thing. I advise everyone who's trying to publish, make sure you read between the lines. Because, okay, here I am thinking, okay, I've got 7 years with these people, so I know I've got to do at least 3 books a year. So I send them the second manuscript. Until I realized they sent me another contract. So I'm like, wait a minute, I already have a contract. And they were like, oh, no, it's a contract per book. I said, oh, what did I get myself into? And that's when I decided that moment, I'm going self-publishing after this. Let them keep those 2 books until it's 7 years is up. Yes.
Wow. Okay. So let me see if I can understand this agreement with this contract. The contract is for 7 years, and you said for every book?
Per book that you submit to them. I didn't know that. I thought it was 7 years with them, period, like, you know, as an author. So I had to send an email to them and let them know that I wanted to submit the second book, you know. So I'm thinking, like I said, that I have 7 years. I'm going to do at least three books a year. So I'm ready to send my second book. She said I have to wait every 6 months to send a book in. I said, okay, so when I send the second book in, they're telling me, you have another 7-year contract with us, here, sign here, sign here. So I'm like, wait a minute, but I thought I already had a 7-year contract. So then she was like, no, it's per book. It's every book has its own contract. I said, okay.
And the moral of our story, because I'm there with you, the moral of our story is that we need to get savvy when we look at these contracts, make sure that we understand what we're doing, and if we can, try to go to self-publishing, right? That way we because that way we kind of know what we're doing. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, okay, here's some comments from the chat room. Lisa, I'm going to get to that one in a minute. I'll get to that one in a minute, Nike Ma. One person said, how much do the stamps cost? And GD, are you really doing the math on that $1 check for a dollar? And so somebody writes, Girl Please writes, the exchange of money seals the contract, whether it's a dollar or 1 cent. If you can cash it, the contract becomes binding. Unbelievable. And somebody says,
cash it, so do I get out of the contract?
well, that is a good question. Now, as a
I
result
sure
of the
conversation, I'm still looking at it.
Oh, wow. Okay. And somebody asked, did she say who the publisher was? And I believe your publisher is Publish America?
Yes, Publish America.
Okay, so that's one that we're trying to ward people to stay away from. Okay, so now this question I was going to ask, but Nike Ma was right on the money. So of all the beautiful poems you have ever written, is there one that stands out as a favorite of yours?
Actually, amazingly, I love them all. Oh, no, that was wrong. I know. I actually do have one that I did for my child. I did for my daughter. I have that one that stands out. Like, it's actually, at least to me, because, you know, it was dedicated to my daughter.
It was dedicated to your daughter, so it's kind of close to your heart.
Yes, it's called A Poem for My Child.
Okay.
Did you write that
while you were pregnant or after she was born?
I did it like 2 days after she was born, or a day. I think it was a day because she was born at 1:54 a.m. and I did it when I woke up, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so the next day.
And how old is your baby?
She's 14.
Oh, she's not a baby no more. So does she know that poem is about her?
Yes. I actually recited to her when she was about probably 4, but she couldn't understand a little bit of what I was saying, 4 or 5. And, you know, I show it to her over and over again, so you can know how mommy feels about her every day of the week.
Okay. And what was the title of that poem again?
It's called A Poem for My Child, page 57 in my quarter card.
I love it. I love it very much so. Someone else, just to tack on to the last part of the discussion we had regarding this publisher thing, if it is not cashed, you can get out. So I guess that's something that we need to kind of explore, because that is ridiculous.
I did sign a contract. So is that, I don't know.
And so,
I know in
so
the letter it said something about, you know, we're taking it that your work is serious and we're going to publish it. It's in advance. And I didn't say anything about casting it, but, you know, I was like, oh, thank you. How wonderful.
Okay, so this person
but
is
I'm
pretty
definitely
adamant.
I'm going to look into that.
Yeah, this person is pretty adamant, too, and it deserves looking into. So Girl Please says again, as long as no money has exchanged hands and the contract states that you are getting it advanced for signing.
Oh, okay.
So that's something to look into. So the next question I have, wait a minute, it says here, GD, it's Elaine, tell Fiora to inbox me. So Elaine wants you to inbox her after the show, I believe.
No problem.
Okay, so that's what I'm talking about. There is strength in numbers. Okay, so the next question, what inspires you most about this existence that we are all living in?
Inspires me most. My inspiration is God every day. I wake up, I'm inspired by Him. I'm inspired by my amazing mother because she took care of me all by herself, never complained. And I would say I'm more inspired now with myself because, like before, I was kind of like I said, going through the wrong lane for a while. You know, I kind of, growing up, kind of felt like, you know, alone. I'm my only child, by the way. I have any brothers or sisters but my mother's side. So I was raised alone, and I felt like, you know, a lot of pressure growing up. And I just looked up to my mother. You know, she used to get up every day, go to a factory to really, you know, get some money in the house and pay bills. And it was rough. And like I said, I used to live, remember when I was in DR, I had a good life. So coming from that life to basically squishing pennies to get something to eat or whatever it was, it was really hard. But, you know, I think she inspired me the most, my mother, because I get up and I'm like, you know what, I'm doing this for my mother. So when she get older, she has a good life like I have when I was growing up. kind of thing, you know?
So you kind of went from the Jeffersons to the good times.
Yeah.
Now, for,
yes.
Okay. Now, I'm thinking,
yes.
I'm like, I'm probably dating myself because those are shows like back in the 70s. So I have, this is a, another question that I have that I didn't write down, but as a result of listening to some of the challenges that you faced as you were, you know, first coming over here, have you run into any of those kids that used to give you a hard time prior to you learning how to speak English?
Nope, not even one of them. No, once
okay,
I moved, because I used to live in Manhattan, New York, and once I moved from there to the Bronx, I haven't bumped into anyone, none of them, or any of them, rather.
Okay, well, here's a question. So if you did encounter one of them, do you think he
mm-hmm.
would say anything?
Probably not. They made my life miserable, so I'll probably just walk on by.
I think we all have those. I think
maybe
all
if they stop me, I will, you know. But if they don't, no, I would not acknowledge them. I would just keep walking.
Take the high road all the way. I think all of us, at some point, those of us who are sensitive and those who are pretty creative, have a certain story to tell about maybe a bully or people that were not nice to us growing up, and I'm wondering if that's just the rite of passage as far as being a child. And
you know, it's
children
weird because
can be,
a lot of people I know, like, yeah, they've been through a lot before they became a writer, a lot of stuff, especially with the bullying and people making themselves, you know, oh, you're not worth it, or being lonely, or, you know, just a lot of, how you say it, like you take something negative and turn it into positive.
You could say that twice if you want to.
Yes,
you can. Elaine wants to know, have you ever written anything about bullying?
Actually, I have not, but in my novels, I will be doing something similar to that. More like, well, I'm going to take it on another level as far as I want to take it to the level where you could see what the woman has to go through. Or what the child had to go through and stuff like that. But I want to write my story, but I want to write it in the sense of someone else. How you say it? Like a nonfiction, a fiction of my story. So I was going to put that into one of my books, like how I was bullied because of the language and stuff like that.
Okay, yeah, that's something that definitely deserves to be explored, because it's amazing how heartless people can be. And I guess because children are kind of unrefined, you know, children just about say anything, you know. So the next question I have for you is, have you ever participated in spoken word events to get a feel of an audience reaction?
I have never done that.
Are there any plans on doing it?
Yes. You mean like open mic or something like that? Like audience?
Right.
Oh, yes. Actually, I'm looking into that because I met this lady where I work at right now, and she told me about this new bar lounge kind of thing. She said they're looking for artists and poets, and so I'm looking into that right now for the weekend coming. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great, because when you read the poem that you read for me and the listeners, I could just see you standing in front of a mic, you know, reciting that, and that way you could make the eye contact with the people and get that whole vibe into you. I think that would be an incredible experience, even for me. I've never done it before myself. So that's why I asked. So definitely look into that one. I'm going to have to do it too myself. So which
yes,
of your
gonna
poems?
Yes, we're going to do it together.
Yes, we will. Okay, so now which of your poems has generated the most emotional response from a reader who read it?
Okay, let's see. Which one of my poems? I know I did a lot of. I got a lot of it. It's coming. I'm looking at the book right now. I'm on page 30. Oh, 21. And my poetic heart.
Okay, this is page 21 of My Poetic Heart. Okay, go for it.
It's called Rest in Peace.
Rest in Peace?
Rest in Peace.
Okay.
Yes. All this time I tried to change you, I should have loved you for you. You always loved me the same, despite of what we've been through. They say you never know what you got until it's gone. You were a star to many of us when I felt so alone. You made a difference in our lives. Our hearts will never forget you. You are one of a kind. No one could ever replace you. Our hearts are now broken. No one can mend it together. I know today I have to say goodbye to you, but it will not be forever. That one right there gets a lot. Everybody's like, who did you write that for?
That's what I was going through my mind as I was sitting here listening
yes.
to you recite it. Is that written with someone in mind?
Yes, it was an ex-boyfriend of mine that passed away.
I know.
And, I wrote it to recite it at his funeral.
I knew it. I knew it was. And, of course, it would invoke certain feelings within people that listened to it, especially people that had lost someone. So
yeah.
Was that your true love that you lost? Or you said he was an ex-boyfriend, so I guess he, yeah.
Well, I loved him, but I don't think he was born.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so do you, as a result of this experience with Publish America, because I remember when the artist formerly known as Prince was going under the title The Artist Formerly Known as Prince, because
yeah.
he couldn't use his name Prince until mm. he worked his way through the contract. So because you are with Publish America, you do have, I guess, a certain obligation, at least up to this point in time, until you find out
yeah.
if, because you have not cashed that 1 cent check, if you're still obligated for the contract. But in the meantime, I suppose that you would be able to step outside of Publish America. So they don't own your name, right?
No, I don't believe so. I think they just own the book, the actual book.
Yeah, definitely questions to ask yourself. So you say that you're writing a novel right now. What's the name of that title of that novel?
It's called Can I Tell You a Secret?
Ooh. Yeah, you can. You sure can. Can you give us a quick synopsis of what it's going to be about, or is it too new right now?
No, I can give you the quick synopsis, sorry. I have a real much vocabulary. It comes back to Spanish sometimes, so you have to forgive me.
That's okay, honey. You're among friends.
Spanish tongue. Okay. Can I tell you a secret? It's a story about a young Mexican woman who came to the U.S. illegally after her parents died in a tragic car accident. From afar, Jessica, her husband, Jose, and their children seem to be a happy American family. But underneath it all, she and her children are afraid for their lives each and every day. Until Jose's friend, Mike, reveals the secret about Jose's past that could set her free. Armed with this information, Jessica is faced with the choice of trusting the police and face the possibility of deportation and lose her children or remain in constant fear for her and her children's life forever. That's the synopsis.
Oh, my God, that's going to be a tearjerker, I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's definitely, it's fiction, right?
Yeah, it's fiction.
Okay, it's fiction. And what made you decide to tell this story? Because I know some of it has, echoes of your own experience coming here to this country. Did you ever have to deal with immigration while you were here?
Yes, I was actually a permanent resident until April of this year when I became a citizen.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I've dealt with them, basically all my life. When I had to travel, I needed to, have permission or out of school already. I couldn't, take off more than, I think it's 3 months before I could lose my permanent residence. So, I had to deal with immigration. Or my mother, rather, until I was of age.
Uh-huh. And so was it like what we see in movies where they come by and do impromptu visits to your house, or Is it nothing
no,
like that?
No, you actually just go to the immigration place when you need a permit to go out of the state. You got to give them a reason why you're going, how long, and all of that. And then once you get approved, then you go wherever you got to go. You know, but I never had they never came to my house or anything like that. Never.
Well, I'll tell you one goddang on thing. I definitely will not complain because, you know, I was born here. And even though, you know, I'm going through the challenging times that I'm going through, I certainly must stop and commend you on your courage. Because I'm going to tell you right now, coming from another country, coming over here not knowing the language, you know, experiencing homelessness, then you experienced being pregnant at such a young age. And you have managed to overcome quite a bit in a short period of time. And there has to be this special something within you.
Yeah.
And it's called determination. It's called determination.
I was going to say that. Determination.
Yes, determination.
My mother always put that inside of me. She's like, you have to do, this is how it's going to be. She used to tell me, this is how you're going to do it. You have to go out there on your own. Bye.
And that speaks a lot to your character. And if I might be forward and say that that is going to be the hook that is going to bring people in to want to read your poetry. People want for people to want to read what you write because it's coming from your heart. And one thing I do know, and I keep using Mary J. Blige as an example, but when people tap into that special part of you that they know is real, that is genuine, that is what pulls people in, and that is what longevity is all about. So what I want to say, you know, from author G.D. Grace, on behalf of my show, A Touch of Grace, I just want to say, you know, you keep on doing what you do, and I am so excited to be part of your life, to be able to see all the great things that are going to happen for you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm blessed to have you in my life also, and everyone that is listening also.
Okay, now here it is as we wind down. What is the one message that you would like to leave the listeners with tonight on this final A Touch of Grace show for the year of 2010? What is the one message that you would like listeners, someone listening, to take away from this show this evening?
I would have to say the only person that we should fear is God. Blessings come in small packages. Doesn't have to necessarily be, you know, money or clothes or material things. Sometimes it can just be this, you know, you're talking to a person that's going through something and seeing yourself in that person's shoes and being able to help them in any kind of way you can, whether it's just by listening or whether it's just, you know, not talking over them, but more like listen, if you just listen, sometimes that's all a person needs. So it's good to just listen to what people have to say. You just never know what you'll learn and you never learn and you never, never old enough to learn.
Well, you said that perfectly. And so, ladies and gentlemen, it looks like this is the final broadcast of the year, and I want to thank the lovely Fiordaliza Charles for spending this incredible hour with us. And I thank you, love. Thank you for stopping by.
I'm grateful. I'm grateful
okay.
for you giving me an opportunity to come to the show and be a part of your show, and I'm blessed that I got a chance, excuse me, to speak with all of my great author friends who I love so much and everyone that's listening. And I really appreciate, I'm tearing here, sorry. I'm very thankful for everyone. I'm really thankful for everyone. And thank you for listening to my story.
Now you got me up in here tearing up.
Sorry.
Okay, so on that note, the first show of 2011 is Saturday, 1/11/11, and I'll be interviewing the talented cast of Adriana L. Williams' play, which was taken from her book, In Laws from Hell. It'll be opening at the Orleans Hotel Casino in Vegas on February 26th at 7 p.m., and I'll actually be able to attend that one because a friend of mine stepped out to help me out in this time of need. So until then, happy holidays from A Touch of Grace. God's blessing to you and yours. And this is author G.D. Grace saying, ciao for now.
Ciao for now.